You're listening to the Pinto and White Shadow Show on KFGO.com and 740thefan.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Pinto and White Shadow Show here on KFGO.com, 740thefan.com as well. We're looking at the 043 podcast of the Pinto and White Shadow Show. Daniel Pinto Gunnarsson here with the co-host and back in the U.S. of A., Brad the White Shadow Jones, coming back from his European tour. Boy, he was all over. Saw, heard, felt, smelled, and tasted quite a few things while over in Europe.
All factual, yeah.
And we'll get to that in just a moment. First, however, we want to give you some information how to follow us on Twitter. You can follow me at PintoKFGO. You can follow Brad Jones
at the Bison Guy.
You can email us pinto.whiteshadow@gmail.com. You can leave a comment at the comment section of our podcast page at KFGO.com as well. I Facebook this out. You can be my friend on Facebook. Follow me there as well, or be a fan or a like of the 740 The Fan Facebook page or KFGO Facebook page, and you'll find links to this podcast there as well. A lot of things to discuss in this podcast. Well, actually, no, that's not true. That's not factual in the least. There won't be a ton of things to discuss. Brad Jones working on about, what did you say, 4 hours sleep, you'd say?
In the last 2 days, yeah, right around in there.
So Brad Jones was in Europe, and we'll discuss that. We'll discuss the NDSU baseball team making the NCAA tournament, first time in their program's Division I history. You also have some NBA basketball to discuss, Kevin Love news out. Dave Yeager, the head coach of the Memphis Grizzlies, talked about, almost went to the Minnesota Timberwolves, but things fell through at about the 13th or 11th hour, I should say. 13th hour is a different term. 11th hour, and we'll talk about that as well. Okay, Brad.
Yep.
Europe. How was it? I've been twice. This is your first experience.
So where all have you been?
And again, it was Germany, Luxembourg, Switzerland, Italy, France, and England.
Okay, so we only overlap
and London
on,
as well.
We only overlap on one. I spent about 4 days in London.
Okay,
I had 2 days in Amsterdam and 2 days in Brussels in Belgium. So it was a lot of fun. We had a really good group of students that went over there, and it was very interesting. Again, like you said, my first journey abroad. We saw some very interesting characters at the different places. Saw a lot of history. That was one of the biggest differences, is just how much of a premium people put on new things here and how much of a premium people put on the historical things there. Just a big difference. Always the most expensive parts in town were the oldest parts of town.
Right. Oh, yeah.
In overseas, which was really interesting.
How tiny was everything? It seemed like when I was in London, everything just seemed really close. And I meant tiny, I mean by space, not by size, but tiny spaces.
Sure. Yeah. The streets are very narrow. The bus driver that we had, Arno, in Amsterdam and Brussels, I got to give
Arno
a shout out.
Yeah, no, yeah. That makes sense.
Avid listener.
Sure he is now.
But he really was a maniac behind the bus. And I mean that mostly in a good way.
Yeah.
He nearly ran some people over. Red lights, for the most part, were suggestions. But he was able to maneuver that thing into some tight spaces. But yeah, things were very much very close together. London was great to get around just because it's so efficient with the tube.
Yep.
To get to different places. So we did everything from the London Eye to saw Parliament and Big Ben, saw Westminster Abbey, saw Buckingham Palace, took a ride on the Eye, saw 221B Baker Street, Sherlock Holmes, saw Abbey Road. We did a Jack the Ripper tour, which was very interesting.
Yes.
So the guy who gave us the tour had actually given the tour, the last Olympics, the London Olympics, to the U.S. men's basketball team.
Okay.
And had done it for President Clinton and Duran Duran. So he's, and so yeah.
Been
so
all over the place.
He's
there.
Been all over the place, but he's been doing, and he had some great information for us. Tour guides were great. Amsterdam, a very interesting city. Saw some things, man. Saw some stuff. And and part of this, it was a group of political science, criminal justice students. So it was really looking to see just the differences in some of those aspects from those cities. We got to see some lectures, got to go to the European Commission. Go to the Peace Palace in The Hague in Netherlands. So it was, yeah, it was really interesting. Go to the University of London.
Yeah, you're doing it at the right age. I did it when I was 18, did it once before then when I was really 13, I want to say, something like that. My sister went over there, studied abroad through MSUM for a semester. And then I went over there with a music tour, and we went all over the place for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
You got to be older to appreciate it because you have to understand the history.
Yep.
And another aspect of it, too, is that when you go over there, their cultures, they're just so different. Even just London to America, because the English-speaking part of it, you get through that, and it's a little bit of a different dialect, but it's a different dialect even in your own country.
Sure.
But you can understand what they're trying to say, and you can get through that, so it's not as difficult. But everything, you know, you talk about just the how much stress we put on time. That was one thing I really noticed. We put so much stress on time. It's got to be here. We got to be now. There's a meeting. We got to.
Yep.
And with them, that's whatever. Yeah. You know, they're so much more relaxed when it comes to time, and they take their time, and they're very, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But no, that to me was London, I think, which we can talk about. Really, I saw the difference there with how massive London is.
It's so big, but you wouldn't notice it. Like, Amsterdam was harder to get around than London was because you get those daily passes to the metro, to the tube. And you're just, I mean,
mind the gap.
You're all the, I got a sweatshirt. I almost wore that in, but I got a Mind the Gap sweatshirt.
Of course.
At one of the souvenir shops there. But Brussels was great, too. Just a really chill, other than the day that, and this is kind of a different tone with it, but the shooting that happened at the Jewish Museum on Saturday, about 9 of the students I were not very far from where that took place. I heard the gunshots, didn't realize what it was at the time, and didn't really, wasn't close enough to see any major commotion or anything. But we found out back at when we got to the hotel, holy smokes, we heard gunshots today. So glad everything was okay with that. But other than that, really enjoyed just the feel of the city. Just very relaxed, very chill. Enjoyed the food, enjoyed the beer. Got some great wow. beers there. Shout out to my boy Kyle at Churchill's. It was.
You just throwing out.
Another
avid listener.
Absolutely.
What's up, Kyle?
It was really a fun experience. I missed you a lot. That's not true. I didn't think about you once when I was over there.
So.
But happy to be back. It was really good to get home. I think you said 3 weeks. That's a long time to do that. We had 10 days total. Two of those 10 days were really travel days. I can't imagine doing much more than that. I think that was about the limit where we were all kind of ready to, all right, let's get back home.
Well, yeah, 3 weeks drags. I was gone for about a month because with that music tour back in high school, they had us at NDSU for 3 or 4 days just practicing the songs.
Sure.
And then they'd take us out. We'd bust out from there down to the cities. And then we flew out of the cities and flew to wherever it was, mm-hmm. Chicago, Detroit, and then flew from there out.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, see, we had – that was nice. When we flew out, we had direct – we flew Fargo to Minneapolis, then Minneapolis directly to London.
Yeah.
And then we flew – it was – yeah, way back was a little more hop, skip, and a jump. It was Brussels to Amsterdam, which is closer than Fargo to Minneapolis, then Amsterdam to Minneapolis, four-and-a-half, five-hour layover – then Minneapolis to Fargo. So.
Yeah, the traveling bit can get a little bit old, especially if you're in a bus or a plane and everything's a little different, but just the experience in itself. And
it was I'll be back over there someday. It was a great experience.
The couple things that you didn't get to do that I got to do was I got to go to a Jewish internment camp, I think is well, we called them internment camps, death camps essentially.
Yep.
Yes.
We did see the Anne Frank House along those lines.
Okay.
We got to see the Anne Frank House in Amsterdam.
Yeah, so much history over in Europe, and it is just – I think people get a little bit nervous and a little bit apprehensive because of the language barrier. You just forget it. I mean, that's just going to be part of your trip.
It's going to be part of it, but it wasn't – at least the places we were. London, obviously, there wasn't really any issues there. But, you know, Netherlands, I think that was another interesting difference too is just how – you know, being multilingual is kind of part of the culture there where they speak a lot of them. French is the primary language, but a lot of them speak Dutch. And almost every place that we went, they spoke English, had English menus at the restaurants. So they were really accommodating at all the places that we were with that. And a lot of the places, the restaurants we went to, we just, hey, this place looks okay. Let's stop here.
Fun.
Yeah.
A lot of fun.
It was
good. Let's get into some sports.
Let's do that.
Things that happened while you were gone. We'll start with
local,
and the one big thing that happened while you were gone, the North Dakota State University baseball team qualified for the NCAA tournament. I'll run through a little bit of the list. They beat Western Illinois on Saturday, 9-0 in the Summer League Championship game. Third straight year NDSU was in it, but this being the first time that they've won it. First NCAA appearance in the Division I era for the North Dakota State University baseball team, and they were graced by being sent out to Corvallis to take on the number one overall seed in the NCAA tournament, Oregon State University, in that regional. Yep. And the way it works with baseball, as it does with softball, it's a double elimination. So they'll play on Friday, May 30th at 10 o'clock at night, ESPNU. If you have it, make sure and watch it. That's going to most likely be a loss. I just don't see them beating Oregon State right away. But doesn't mean that their season's over. They can go and play a little bit later, play another team that has lost since double elimination, worked their way back. So they're guaranteed, at the very least, two games in Corvallis. So that will be fun for them. Congratulations to North Dakota State University and head coach Todd Brown and that team. But the question I have, we'll look at it from just the perspective of, I don't know if anybody's going to bring this up, and I didn't hear it brought up at the press conference today, but this was only a four-league team, or a four-team league this year around, where usually in the past they've had six, and the top four qualify anyways. But the best team this year was the University of Nebraska-Omaha. They couldn't qualify for the Summer League tournament because they weren't eligible. And a team that has won year in, year out for as long as the Summit League has been around, Oral Roberts, was out of it this year. And they were out of it last year as well because they weren't part of the Summit League. Do you still consider this accomplishment impressive, or do you take it, not maybe with an asterisk, but a grain of salt?
You can't do that. The books are going to show that's none of that is in NDSU's control. They did what they were supposed to do. They came in as the fourth-ranked team in that tournament, and you know what? They won it. They got good performances, great pitching performance from David Ernst in the championship game, and they got the job done. If we look back on it 10 years from now, you're really going to say, they made it, but whatever. It's going to go down as one of the best accomplishments in the history of this program, to this point anyway. And, you could do that with so many different things. You could do that with, with the men's basketball team. Oral Roberts was always one of the top teams in the Summit League. You could do that with the football team when Georgia Southern and Appalachian State. All of a sudden, how far do you want to go with that? I understand it's a little apples and oranges there, so don't, Marcus from Mayville, you can ease up there. But they're in the record books. They're the conference champions.
NDSU, like we said, 9-0 win. One of the cool things about that win over Western Illinois, and David Ertz is one of the better pitchers, but the guy who actually threw in the championship game, Reed Fannenstein, and I'm most likely mispronouncing that name because it starts PF.
Okay.
Regardless, 8 1/3, 5 hits, 1 walk, 6 Ks. But John Skirbeck, this guy who came in to that game batting .186, no homers, 12 RBIs, had no hits in the Summer League tournament up to that point in the game. First inning, it's 2-0. NDSU's jumped out to a big lead, hits a bomb with 2 outs, a grand slam. At that point, I think if you're Western Illinois, you're going, oh boy.
Yeah,
I mean, if this is going to happen, what are we supposed to do? NDSU, again, this was their third attempt. And, the last 2 years, in 2012, they had a really good team. 40-win team.
Yep.
Went up against Oral Roberts in the Summit League title game. Had to win one game. Couldn't do it. All right, 2013, a little bit of a different scenario. I think maybe, again, only 4 teams qualified, maybe 5. Not entirely sure. But South Dakota State and NDSU in the title game. NDSU, South Dakota State, NDSU just needs to win one. Again, they lose back-to-back games. And so here is an opportunity. They made the most of it. It's a team that's been through it before. And Todd Brown, to go to a little bit of the history of this Division I era for NDSU baseball, when he took this job, I asked him the question, back in 2008, his first year, they won 15 baseball games.
Yep.
The next year, they won 16. They weren't good.
No.
They were not Division I ready. I asked him about that today, and one of the better quotes he said was, a month after taking the job, I used to lay in bed at night going, why did I take this job? Or what was I doing here? He said it, and it was a very honest thing to say. But you also have to remember guys like Max Kasper, John Straka, Zach Wentz. They played young for this NDSU team and had their growing pains. But by the time they became juniors and seniors, you understood why they were playing young, because those were Browns players. He wanted to implement the system that he trusted and he stood by, and now here you are. And I think you answered it perfectly, that they had no control over that. Yep. You know, they had no control over who they were playing, when they were playing. It's not, you know, who you play, it's when you play them, essentially. So there you go, NDSU to the NCAA tournament.
Now, here's the question, and I think it's an easy answer. Is this the greatest year ever for Bison Athletics?
Yes. I think so, without a doubt.
I mean...
You've got an NCAA championship team in the football team. You've got a win in the NCAA tournament with the men's basketball team. Solid year individually, I believe, from wrestling.
Yep. All-American in wrestling.
All-American in wrestling. Yeah, he ended up finishing third in his weight class, so that's huge. And I'm trying to think of another year I would compare to. Because it would be tough. And you'd have to go to some individual stuff, you know, Amy Anderson doing what she did, qualifying for the NCAA tournament and playing well.
In the Women's U.S. Open a couple years ago.
Yep.
But yeah.
It's so tough because I think 9 conference titles.
Because, you know, even when you look at, you know, I don't know that any of the women's basketball championship teams and the football teams, I don't think any of those overlapped in the D2 era.
No, I don't believe they did.
And
because,
nine of the 14 teams had representation at the NCAA tournament, I believe is what I read.
Is it representative? Because I've always been confused about that.
Because some, I mean, like, you know,
does your wrestling
track
team,
and cross country, you know, wrestling, I mean, some sort of representation. Because some of those, there's kind of a blurred line between individual and team.
Right. And I made the statement out there, and I somewhat stand by it, that NDSU had 6 teams this year qualify, where the team got in. The softball team, basketball team, baseball team, football team, or there have been 6 so far, then volleyball. And I'm trying to think of the other one there that I'm missing. Volleyball, softball, baseball.
Football,
men's basketball, and I think there was one other that I missed.
But
anyways.
Either way, I mean, again, you throw the track, you throw track in there. It's been just an incredible, incredible year for the Bison Athletics program. I mean, just fun to see that, again, when you've got that high a percentage of your teams that are at least having representation there in some way, shape, or form.
Right.
That's really, really impressive.
The other team I'm thinking of, and I don't remember, sadly, is the soccer team.
Soccer, okay.
But 6 teams, but then you have the individual representation. And still, regardless, when you think of how unbelievably well they did this year, you know, and we could talk about the fact that, well, Oral Roberts wasn't in some of these, but in basketball, it didn't matter.
Yeah.
And in softball, it's never mattered. In track and field, it's never mattered. In wrestling, all that stuff, it never matters.
Baseball's the only one
where you can think about, go, well, you know, they weren't having, everybody else had to go through the gauntlet. And the basketball team, I think, regardless, they would have made the NCAA tournament this year with the team they had. Oral Roberts had a decent team, but they weren't anything outstanding in the Southland this year. Yeah. So, again, yeah, it has to be the greatest year for NDSU athletics ever. And the other part of it, too, is if we think back to all these coaches that were hired, most of them Gene Taylor hires. Yeah, yeah, that's right.
Lynn's hired every coach forever for the women's side.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it's been a lot of Gene hires. You got to wonder how much longer he's going to want to.
Well, how much longer he's going to stay.
Yeah.
I mean, all these other coaches are going somewhere. You know, Craig Bohl, Saul Phillips. There's coaches out there that you look at their blueprint and go, boy, I might want him on my team. I'm surprised Darren Mueller hasn't been approached to go to a better job.
He's been approached many times, and he's turned down. Like, I want to say he turned down Minnesota.
And they played in the Minnesota Regional this year.
Yeah. I think Darren just likes it here. I think Darren really, really enjoys it here.
And he's proven, too, that just because they're NDSU doesn't mean they're not going to get victories.
And, you know, when you make it to the Super Regionals of the Women's College World Series, I mean, I think Darren, I could see him being here a long, long time. Because if you were gonna leave, the U of M's probably the natural job for you to go to.
They're good. And if that's the natural step for you as him, That's
maybe even a step above the natural step. I mean, going to a Big Ten team from here, and if he turned that down, you know, we'll see if maybe someday in the future he wants to go. But I could see him being a guy who's here a long time.
So now the question, what's
Gene?
What department out there needs an athletic director?
Because I know Gene, I want to say Gene's interviewed in the past few years. Arizona State, I want to say he's interviewed at.
He's an alum of Arizona State, I believe.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting because you got to figure people are going to come knocking on his door. They should.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it makes sense it really makes a lot of sense to come to him next because you just look at what he's done and now finally to get this basketball arena. I think the next big step for NDSU athletics when it comes to building something would be an indoor practice facility for the football team.
Do you think they want that?
I think they do.
Okay.
Because
I mean, I know they're putting the bubble over Dakota Field.
Right.
And have that in the works, but
I think they want an indoor practice facility for football specifically because, again, it comes down to you have to share time and you have to ask the city of Fargo for permission to practice in the dome if you ever need an indoor practice. Coaches can, of course, go to the, all right, we're going outside today. It's cold, it's windy, you guys need to toughen up. But, you know, you want a bubble or an indoor practice facility or whatever. I think that's the next natural step for NDSU because you look all across the Missouri Valley, you know, South Dakota State is upgrading their facilities for football. Youngstown State, I know, has an indoor practice facility.
It'll be interesting to see where that goes because there's, I mean, as far as a facility standpoint, there's not a lot left.
No,
for them to really really do as far as that goes, which is kind of an interesting spot to be in because it doesn't seem like we've that's not been a conversation that you and I have ever had.
The only other thing, I guess, if you'd want to look past building anything, it's moving the football team up. And how do you do that?
Yeah, that's another conversation for a different show, I think.
But at some point, it is. At some point, you reach your ceiling when it comes to how much money you can make at this era in the FCS. Yeah. And so where are your other revenues coming from? Where are you generating more revenue from? I mean, again, you stay here long enough, but the writing eventually is going to be on the wall. Take your time, see how everything works out. But that to me may be the only thing I can see keeping Gene Taylor around or maybe saying, all right, it's time for me to move on. Here's the next guy who's going to lead you into the next era of Bison athletics. But, yeah, it's interesting to see what will happen in the next couple years with this Gene Taylor situation because it's going to get brought into the forefront a little bit more now.
It's
nine teams. That's unbelievable. I mean, that really is. You hear about that from like Texas or USC, I mean, because they have so much money and so many different athletic teams, but 9 out of 14.
I was going to say, I'd be curious to see where that ranks.
It would be an interesting question. I'd have to do a little bit of research because there's so many conferences, so many teams, and so many different sports that NDSU doesn't play in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, men's soccer, men's volleyball, tennis.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, there's tons. I mean, there's schools like that have like 40 different athletic programs. So, yeah, but it'd be interesting to see where that ends up.
We'll move on from there and hit up
regional.
So Kevin Love made the statement essentially that he doesn't want to sign the option at the end of his fifth year in Minnesota, I want to say. This is his fifth year on the contract, right? Fourth or fifth year. I can't remember what it is.
It's more than four. Next year might be his sixth because I think he had a three-year rookie deal and then had an opt-out after 3 years on his second contract, I believe is how that went.
Let's check it out here. Yeah. I should be able to find it rather quickly. Hang on.
There you go. We are in mid-season form.
Oh, yeah.
How are we doing? Anything? Bueller?
Bueller. Bueller. Well, here we go.
Okay. You better have it. You're out of music
now. I'm looking up his contract status right here, and he must have had basically what he did after the 2011-2012 season. He must have re-signed.
He re-signed, but instead of Conn offering them the five-year max deal, he offered him a four-year deal to
save
the
fifth option.
With an option and an opt-out after three, and was saving that fifth year for Ricky Rubio.
So basically, in 2012-2013, his contract went from 4.6 to 13.6 per year.
Yep.
14.6 this last year. He'll have this upcoming year. It was a four-year deal with a fifth-year option.
It was a four-year deal.
No, a four-year deal with...
fifth-year option, but a three-year or third-year opt-out.
Right.
Yes.
Here it is. Signed extension January 25th for an assumed $60.8 million.
So it'll be after his seventh year with the Timberwolves that he'll be able to opt out. It was four years on the rookie deal.
4 years on the extension.
It was a four-year extension with a third-year opt-out and an option for a fifth.
Right.
Yeah, there we go.
2015-2016 player option.
Yep.
And basically saying he's not going to sign that player option.
Yep.
And so he's done, I think, is how he feels about it, how a lot of people in Minnesota feel about him.
Believe I had that one.
Now that way, okay, so you're... I think I've got a... I don't think I have a you're right sounder.
Okay.
Doesn't matter.
Anyway.
Here, let's just...
Goggle.
Sure, just pick one.
There
you go.
Sure, like there that. You go. It's a little NBA jam for you. Now that we've sorted through that mess...
Yes.
You're in charge of the Timberwolves, Brad. What do you do?
Trade him.
Right now?
Yes. Okay. Yep.
Okay. I agree with you.
Yep.
I do. I think that that's the best option you have in this situation.
And
who do you trade him for? What do you trade
for?
Yeah,
and here's the thing, and this was kind of fun. I was doing some reading on the way back of Bill Simmons, and he laid out seven different teams that have a shot to get him. Really, two... that would offer, I make legitimate offers. I mean, there's going to be a lot made of Golden State wanting to unload David Lee and Klay Thompson.
Okay.
And then maybe, and then doing a Harrison Barnes, Kevin Martin swap in there, plus their draft pick.
Right.
But you know, at least according to Simmons, they don't want to trade Klay Thompson.
I don't think they should. I think they should get rid of some of that money off the books. I think Harrison Barnes a tradable commodity.
Yeah, but
David Lee,
if you get rid of David Lee, that's fine. You know, you obviously want to do that, and the Timberwolves should have no interest in David Lee.
No, they shouldn't. They should avoid that like the plague.
But for Golden State, if they can flip Klay Thompson and David Lee for Kevin Love, they should do that all day and twice on Sunday.
Well, yeah, and it makes sense. But for the way the Warriors want to play, do you want to have a Kevin Love?
Yes. Oh my God. Yes, he fits perfectly in with the way they want to play. He's David Lee, only way better. I mean, you want people who are stretching the floor,
wow,
who can shoot the ball, you know, going to grab the rebounds. He fits perfectly within that system.
Okay.
But I don't think that's the direction they go, because that's not enough. There's two teams that I think could make good offers to the
Who?
Wolves. Boston's number one.
Yes.
Because they've got two first-round picks this year.
Okay.
They've got two first-round picks next year.
All right.
And they've got two unprotected Brooklyn Nets first-round picks. And they can swap picks with Brooklyn in 2017.
So they have a ton of stuff here.
They've got a ton of draft stuff over the next 4 years that they've built up a stockpile.
Okay.
Especially like those two unprotected Brooklyn Nets first rounder in 2016, 2018 look really appealing.
Oh, yeah, especially. With how much money and how many old players are going to be. Oh,
yes.
Boy, yep.
So, you know, and so they threw in, you know, Simmons, the logical offer he had that were four first rounders. But Boston, if they get Kevin Love and they have Rondo, they'll be in the playoffs in the East.
And the other
and
thing
so that
too
keeps
is
them
that
out of the lottery.
The other thing too is that you need those picks because you have to be able to build around Kevin Love and Rondo. So
well,
are you going to give up four first round picks?
You'd at least think about, and keep in mind, this is Simmons, the Boston homer.
Yes.
He's just throwing it out there. But he was just at least, you know, you can look at whether you think that would be good or not. But at least he's saying, here are the commodities that teams have that could make a run at him. So so there's that one. And then the one that they brought up that would be really interesting, Cleveland Cavaliers.
Okay.
Number one, the trade that he said, the number one overall pick, Anthony Bennett, and next year's first rounder for Kevin Love. Monster offer.
Anthony Bennett and next year's first round pick.
And the number one overall pick. So basically Joel Embiid.
Oh, I wouldn't go Joel Embiid if I was the Wolves.
Joel Embiid is going number one overall. That's happening.
But, okay. And I understand that he is the most upside and so on and so forth. I get that. For either the Wolves or Cleveland, if they pick first, if that even happens, why Joel Embiid? You're talking about a project. The guy's been only playing basketball how long?
Yeah, and there's a really interesting article on Grantland, again, going back to Grantland, by Ryan Russillo, where he had been talking to scouts, and every one of them, Embiid. And they basically say he's a 7-foot Serge Ibaka.
And Serge Ibaka is like 6'9", 6'10", you know, and he can jump, but...
And Embiid is the Greg Oden talk, they've all basically said, stop it. He's not Greg Oden. He got hurt once. He doesn't have a degenerative back issue like Greg Oden had. So, I mean, Embiid, they say, look, Embiid's going number one overall. He avoided a lot of the bad habits that come with the AAU scene and all of that since he's only been playing basketball for 4 years. Very coachable. Embiid's going number one overall.
If I'm the Cleveland Cavaliers, knowing that I'm going to have to do the same thing that the Timberwolves are doing right now with Kyrie Irving at some point, because he's not going to stick around.
Those rookies will usually sign that second contract.
If Kyrie Irving can get out of Cleveland, I think he'll go.
Not if they have Kevin Love.
Well, I get that. So he sticks around if Kevin Love's coming up, but... Again, do you want to give up a first-round pick? If Anthony Bennett would have worked out, and again, it's only been a year, so we have no idea, but we're so used to these number one picks coming in 2 years.
At least having some impact, yes. And not putting up a YouTube montage of air balls and bricks.
Right. Anthony Bennett, again, you're talking about a project that may take 4 or 5 years or may never exist. You'd at least like to have some slimmer of hope going, okay, he's there, he's going to come around. After missing what it feels like so badly with last year's first-round pick and now having another opportunity, do you give that away for Kevin Love? Do you give that up for Kevin Love?
Yes.
And next year's pick?
Yes.
Because you like Cleveland. I like Boston.
Okay.
You like Cleveland.
Because the number one overall pick versus, you know, again, if you put Rondo and Kevin Love with Brad Stevens in the Eastern Conference, you're a playoff team. So you're automatically taking their picks out of the lottery.
Yep.
Unless somebody gets hurt, which is possible.
Yeah.
But you're taking those picks out of the lottery.
Okay.
So then at that point, you're hoping to get a role player. If you can trade Kevin Love for the number one overall pick, you've got a chance to grab the guy that you think is going to be a star. And I think Embiid's going to be the number one overall pick. We'll get into NBA draft talk later on. But, you know, if it's Parker or Wiggins that you have, then you've got the chance to get that guy and maybe be able to replace Kevin Love with a superstar, whereas I think the odds are much slimmer of doing that with that Boston offer.
And see, the way I look at it with Cleveland or Boston, you got to get players back. I mean, there's got to be easily swappable contracts because the money has to fit and different things like that. I mean, if Cleveland, you just can't take on, you know, whatever contract
they've got a trade exception.
They have to.
They've got a big trade exception, though.
What is that?
So that basically means I don't know exactly how it works, but basically it means they can swallow extra salary because of some previous trade that they made.
Oh, okay.
They can just take on extra salary because they've got this exception.
Okay, so they wouldn't have to trade somebody. But if you're Minnesota, you want to get somebody back in this, not just picks.
You're getting the number one overall pick back.
But if
you're trading a superstar, you're getting prospects back. You're not going to get another all-star guy back.
But that's fine because you need more than one guy.
But you need that one guy. And it's a lot harder to find that one guy than it is to find more than one just guys.
I'm stunned. I mean, I'm silent here because I don't know how to come back at you with anything because I believe you. You're making a lot of sense. So
it's so hard to find that, especially in Minnesota, because you're not getting a free agent there.
No,
you're gonna have to pay $9 million a year for Kevin Martin.
Yeah,
and that's basically a luxury tax that you have to pay to get a guy to come there. Is you're gonna have to pay him above market value, and a superstar absolutely is not going there. You have to get it in the draft. Timberwolves have been, they've whiffed on so many of their drafts, but that's where it's got to come from.
The other part of it, too, is that you don't have a coach in Minnesota either. I mean, Minnesota's kind of a mess because they got to get rid of Love, and you have to make the right deal because you've whiffed in the draft so many years in a row, and it seems like this draft might be one of those drafts where you go, you can't whiff. I mean, these are meatballs right down the center of the plate. You're going to hit a home run. That's how you feel. let's get up to the top of the plate. Let's hit first in the lineup. Let's do a baseball, basketball, sure. You know, sure. But you don't have a coach to coach anybody right now. So another part of this question, Brad, is does the player or the pick or the trade or whatever come before the coach? Or does the coach come and then they make the deal?
I don't. It's a good question. My initial response was, I don't know that it matters. But I think it does, and I think you probably I think you go, you get the best players. I think you get the best players first. I think there's more, I think it's easier to find coaches who have some, have had some level of success out there than it is to find the top level players. So I think the players come first. You try to find a coach after that. They got, I mean, Rick Adelman, you know, he was a good coach. I mean, he just was. There were obviously some personal things, and, yeah, and he had some things stacked against him in Minnesota. But you know, they got a big name coach to go there. You know, are you telling me that they couldn't? Avery Johnson has to be itching to coach somewhere, and Avery Johnson took a team to the finals. I mean, you know, he's kind of one of those guys that after a few years he seems to kind of wear out his welcome a little bit because he pushes the players pretty hard, but. You're telling me that, you know, you couldn't bring, you know, bring him in?
And
there's some options out there.
Minnesota native Dave Yeager, guy who coached the Grizzlies last year and did a good job with them, seemed to me like the guy for the job. Young coach. And in my thought process when I think about this, is you need a guy who's young and willing to stick it out through going to be a couple rough years. Because when you get to this team, whether it's now or after the draft, you're going to come in going, my superstar doesn't want to be here. Or... we just got rid of the best player that the Timberwolves have had since Kevin Garnett. All right, we're starting over. We're starting from scratch. I got a bunch of role players here, and I have to put together a team. Now, it worked in Toronto, but the only difference there is you're working with some role players that were younger. I mean, you're working with a lot of youth. In Minnesota, there's not much youth. I mean, you got Kevin Martin. He's a veteran. J.J. Barea, veteran. Ricky Rubio, this is what, going to be his third year now in the league?
Yeah, Rubio's,
I mean,
he's young,
but I mean, we've kind of figured out what he is. He's a passer. He can't score, can't shoot. I mean, you're not working with a team where you go, okay, here's some untapped potential that we have to figure out with. In Toronto, it worked. And it did. And even in the East, which is a bad conference, admittedly, they were good enough to be third in there.
Yeah.
But again, you have to be ready to take three, four years and go, okay, we're going to build up to a certain situation, a certain spot here. That's why Yeager made the most sense. And that the reason him coming back and so on and so forth, it's a mess in Memphis right now. I mean, it is a complete and utter cluster over there in Memphis because the owner doesn't get along with the guys in the front office.
Yeah.
And the front office doesn't get along with him, and the owner wants it to. It's just a mess. It's a just complete disaster. But they did the right thing by hanging on to Dave Yeager, making sure that he doesn't go anywhere. And so for Minnesota, whether it be a trade to Cleveland, whether it be a trade to Boston, whether it be whoever, you got to do this right. You got to do it. It's the same thing we talked about the Vikings in the draft. And I think they did a great job of not reaching for a quarterback, seeing Teddy Bridgewater there in the 30 seconds. The same thing with the Timberwolves. You got to be patient with this and go, here are our options.
Yep.
Let's list them. That's the option we want. If it can get done the way we want it to get done, do it. If not, all right.
I think if Cleveland would make that deal, and honestly, that's a deal that makes sense for both teams. It really is.
The one thing you cannot do, you can't let them walk and have nothing to show for it.
And here's the thing. It's Kevin Love seems like the kind of guy who would say, oh yeah, you guys can offer me an extra year that's worth, you know, way more than what anyone else can. He seems like the kind of guy who could walk away from that and would walk away from that for a better situation.
Right.
Because my argument for a number of years was always, okay, somebody's going to walk away from all that money. Well, let's see him do it, because none of them ever do. They'd all force a sign and trade and still get their max money.
Right.
And then Dwight Howard said, L.A., see ya. And he did it. Okay, so there's one. I'm curious to see how many other people will follow suit on that. Kevin Love, I could see being that guy because he's just, you know what? I'm not doing it anymore.
I think what has changed as well, to a smaller extent, is they saw what LeBron did going to a team with talent. And again, it was kind of his doing, being able to recruit Dwayne, or not Dwayne, but Bosh, and saying, okay, we have something here. But you know, if you're Kevin Love, you look around the league and go, okay,
where's my second superstar?
Yep.
At least second, if not third.
Yep.
And it's not there. You got to find that. You got to have that right now with the way the league is.
Yeah, I agree. So it'll be interesting, but I think you and I are both in agreement. They have to do this before the draft to get the most potential and the most they can get out of this trade. You got to do it now. The second option would be do it during the season, but you don't want to wait that long because you're playing with basically a dead team walking. A bunch of guys that know the superstar wants out will be gone at some point. A team that's probably going to lose a bunch of games. And then they're going to trade away Love to a playoff contending team, essentially. Yeah. For what? You know, so it just...
And usually I'm of the mindset of, you know, don't immediately react. You don't have to do this immediately. Make sure this is thought out. Explore your options. This has to get done before the draft. I'm completely with you.
I agree. Let's move on to...
National.
And one of the things that's going on in the national scheme right now is a thing called the NBA playoffs.
Yeah.
We love the NBA here.
We do.
So we're going to talk about it. Pacers Heat.
Yes.
Game 4 tonight while we're recording here on Memorial Day. And the question that I put out there is, let's say the Heat win Game 4 against the Pacers at home. Is the series over?
Yes. I don't really have a follow-up to that.
Are you surprised after the way Game 1 went down, with the Heat being beat up pretty badly by the Pacers, and it looked like the Pacers had turned things around, that now, after Game 2 and Game 3, and especially Game 3, where it's the Pacers, what happened is they couldn't find Ray Allen. I mean, if he was the only guy in a barn, they couldn't have found him. I mean, he was hitting threes. He was wide open in the fourth quarter, went 4 for 4 for 13 points.
Well, they had, and some of this, again, I'm going off of reporting and what I've read, because I was obviously not in a place where I could watch. I caught a little of the game. It was a game one or game two of the Spurs Thunder series on a overnight ferry that we took.
And we'll talk more about that later.
But I haven't seen it. But what I understood was the matchup that they had. I believe they had David West trying to chase around Ray Allen during that fourth quarter, and that was kind of the matchup that just ended up crushing them, because Miami went small. Indiana stayed with West and Hibbert, and that's what really ended up hurting them.
Even so, I mean, just the way the Miami Heat rebounded, because you thought this was a Pacers team built to beat Miami, and it was. I mean, last year it was so close.
Yep.
They were so close to beating them, and you're thinking, okay, game one, they've turned it around. Here we go. This is what we've been waiting for. And then the Heat just come out and no. You know, and it was LeBron James in game two just doing everything for him in the fourth quarter, and then Ray Allen just, you know, knocking down everything in sight in the fourth quarter to pull away. I'm surprised personally that it's come to this, where I look at it the same way you do. That's why I wasn't able to say anything. If they win tonight, this is over. I mean,
it's LeBron is just that good. We're very lucky. You know, we missed out on, we caught some of the tail end of Michael during his run as we were younger, but getting to see the full span of LeBron's career, it's going to be real, real fun to look back on that. And again, assuming no injuries, if he stays healthy, there's going to be a conversation there. And he's just, when you just say, you know what, they have LeBron.
Yeah,
I don't. You know, that's it. That's the list.
That's the only argument. Hang on, I've got this one.
Oh, that's right. That's my supposedly my catch.
That's the only argument.
It's the only argument I need, Sean.
That's pretty much it is. LeBron James. It's the only argument you need. I mean that he is that good. Moving on to the other series, the Western Conference Finals. Serge Ibaka came back after being considered out for the season with a calf injury. He came back in Game 3. Seemed as if the Thunder responded in kind by winning Game 3 and pretty much dominated. I think the starters got taken out for the Spurs with about 5 minutes ago in the fourth. Question being, do you think him returning will stem the tide and put it back in the Thunder's favor, or do you trust the Spurs to adjust and continue to beat OKC?
It's interesting. The Spurs are so good. It's just, as much as we talked about this in our last podcast, that we wanted to see Miami, Oklahoma City, because we wanted to see Durant and LeBron go one-on-one.
And I think the NBA wants to see that. But
yes, I think they do. But San Antonio's just too good. I think Ibaka coming back makes it interesting. I expect the Spurs to win Game 4, and I don't know if Durant. We'll see. Maybe Durant will prove me wrong, and maybe he is at that LeBron level. He's been doing it this season. He deserved the MVP award. But can he just carry a team over and say, you know what, your pieces 2 through 10 might be better than our pieces 2 through 10,
right?
But I'm that much better that I can make up for all of that. Let's see if he can do it. LeBron has proven that he can. Let's see if Durant can do it too.
I think game 4 is going to be a very telling game with Oklahoma City, because I think
you're not winning 3 straight against San Antonio and 2 of those games in San Antonio. That's not happening. Oklahoma City has to win.
I think Ibaka coming back was a huge emotional lift, and yes, he played well. I mean, it wasn't he was just thrown out there to give him some
6 of 7 from the field in 30 minutes, I think.
A bunch of blocks, 5 or 6. He played really well. You saw the difference he made.
What happened? Was the misdiagnosis that bad? Did he get the Ray Lewis deer antler spray treatment? I mean, how do you go from being ruled out for the playoffs, for the season, to actually, by that we meant 2 games?
I think what happens is bodies respond differently to strains, and that's what it is. I think a strain, it depends on who you are. And a grade 2 strain, when you look at it, and I'm just doing this off the top of my head, but my guess is when you look at it and go, okay, we've dealt with things like this before, and the amount of pressure this guy can put on at this moment, I don't see him playing again. This is an injury that typically takes whatever to recover from.
True.
Everybody responds differently. I think it's not more of a misdiagnosis as it is that doctors have to look at things like this and diagnose it from a very generic standpoint. It's the same thing you think about with an ACL tear in Adrian Peterson. He wasn't supposed to come back as soon as he did and do the things he did after that. But he's a different human being.
Yeah.
And he was able to respond to that. Everybody responds differently.
But, you know, I get that, but I don't know. I have to do some more reading on that, because that was the one thing that when I came back from Europe and was reading up and kind of getting caught up on things that just blew my mind of out for the playoffs, which the playoffs at that point could have been another 3 weeks to a month.
Right.
And, just kidding. Less than a week. You know what? Come on back.
The other part of it, too, is maybe sometimes.
Did I just sound like Jay Leno a little bit there?
Yeah, a little bit. I think some other times too is that the opposing teams will use the media as their own, you know, to their own benefit. Mm. Where, look, here's how it's going to go.
Oh, he's out for the season. He's out San for Antonio, the season. Don't prepare for him.
Right. He's out for the season. I don't think he's going to be able to come back. And then you plant that seed. And then next thing you know is, oh, it's not as bad as we thought.
It's
he's coming
a miracle.
Back. And then the crowd gets into it, and the energy in the team is a little bit different. I think
maybe
that's some
maybe
games.
Maybe they'll pull a Paul Pierson, haul him out of a wheelchair in game 4.
Yeah. That's some gamesmanship, I think, a little bit.
Okay.
But again, you know, you think about it and go, it seems a little sketchy. And if that's what you're using to get a team pumped up for the Spurs and using it to your mental advantage, that seems a little bit, at the conference finals, that seems a little bit.
Yeah, and
Considering the fact that the Thunder 2 years ago were down 2-0, and this was even before the finals.
And swept
the next 4 games.
Yeah.
Again, when I look at this series, I think that this game is going to be the most telling, because you're going to see a very close game. All 3 games have been blowouts, essentially, where neither losing team was close.
What's your prediction?
I think the Thunder pull it out. I do, because I think Ibaka is that big of a difference defensively in the paint. And I don't think that – I think the Thunder play better defensively when he's in.
So if you think the Thunder win game 4, then you're saying – my guess is you're going to pick Spurs in 7?
Yeah, I see the Spurs winning in 7. You think it's over in 5? You think they're not even going to get another victory? All right. I'll take that.
I won't, but I don't feel overly confident in it. I don't know that the Thunder are. They got the emotional lift. How is it going to respond?
Right,
you know, from 30
that
minutes
was the
on the court.
Question.
And the Spurs, I think this year are just too good. They just are.
We'll see. Kawhi Leonard is a big deal for this team. He has really changed things. But again, you know it. It comes down to what happens if Durant just catches fire.
And that could happen, and that's why I wouldn't put the wager on it, because Kevin Durant is good enough to where he could just, you know what, I'm winning one of these games by myself.
There is nobody in the NBA, maybe except for LeBron James, that can guard him. And even LeBron James would have difficulty because...
Oh, well, there was the game that, you know, there was a regular season game a couple months ago where those two just went back and forth towards the end of the third quarter.
Right.
And Durant just pulled up from 27 feet, just buried one. LeBron was right there. Those two went at it, and Durant got the better of him that night.
Yeah. Parker was not available for game three, essentially. I mean, he just did not show up.
And the only person that showed had a decent game even was Ginobili.
Yeah.
Everyone else shot really poorly.
Yeah.
So
I don't see that happening the rest of the series, but I think because of what Ibaka gives to this team in the lane, and you saw it too, because when a guy drives, people collapse. But when you have Ibaka there, mentally you go, okay, Serge has got it. I'm going to stick on my guy. And the Spurs have done a great job of adding guys from the wing who can just knock it down. Danny Green among them. So yeah, we'll see what happens. That'll be a fun game on Tuesday to watch. All right, last thing we'll get to.
You've got mail.
Marcus and Mayville makes a comment. We were talking drafts a couple podcasts ago, 2003, 1996, kind of comparing the two drafts because of the impending Hall of Famers that are going to be coming into the NBA this year. It's what everybody is saying. Marcus comments, the only other draft that I put up against the 96 and 03 draft is 84. Not nearly as deep. However, the top four in these drafts might trump the top four in the other ones. He has Hakeem Olajuwon, Michael Jordan, Charles Barkley, and John Stockton as his top four. Brad, would you say that the 84 draft may be better at the top than 96 in 2003?
Well, we had already kind of said 96 over 2003 was, we both reached that agreement in the last podcast. So if we're going to look at 96 versus, and I have the 84 draft pulled up, but I'm just bringing up here 96, because your top four, the four that we kind of said, okay, here's your Hall of Famers. Kobe Bryant, Steve Nash, Allen Iverson, Ray Allen.
Yes.
And with the...
And you talked about maybe Stojakovic.
Maybe Stojakovic, yeah. He's a fringe guy. But if you're looking at your top four, your surefires, those are your four guys.
Right.
Would I take, you know, Jordan, Hakeem, Barkley, Stockton over those four? Yeah. Yeah, if you're looking, like you said, not as deep, but if you're just looking top four... Yeah, you're not going past 84 because you're looking at the number one shooting guard, you know, top five center, you'd probably say, with Olajuwon.
Probably one of the greatest shot blockers of all time.
Yes, and I believe still has the record for most career blocks. But that's, of course, keeping in mind that Bill Russell, Wilt Chamberlain didn't record.
It's a newer stat.
Yeah, didn't record blocks at that point. But your all-time leader in blocks, top five center of all time. You're looking at John Stockton.
Top point guard of all time, or at least one of them?
He's up there, I'd say, top four.
I mean,
you look at Magic Johnson, you look at, I think, Oscar Robertson was
another
considered
guy,
a point.
I think, yep.
And Stockton's going to be right there challenging for that next spot with the Isaiah Thomases of the world, with the probably when he's done Chris Paul, depending on if he can grab some rings, I'm sure I'm missing, you know, Jason Kidd, Gary Payton, those kind of guys are going to be in that conversation. Steve Nash will also be in that conversation.
And I think John Stockton, because of the point guard position at its purest form, is a passing position and sets up the rest of the offense. And the Utah Jazz are never the Utah Jazz that they are
without Stockton.
Without Stockton.
Yep. So, you know, you'd take Stockton there. And then
Charles Barkley.
And Charles Barkley, you're looking at
one of the greatest.
I'd say the second greatest
power forward.
Maybe third. I'd say Duncan is an easy one.
Yep.
And then you're looking at combination of KG, Karl Malone, Dirk Nowitzki, and Chuck. Yeah, Chuck, KG, Dirk, Malone as the next four.
And I think what makes Chuck so much better in the eyes of a lot of people, he was an undersized power forward.
Yeah.
He was only 6'6".
Yeah.
You know, but he could play the
position. And I don't even know if he was 6'6". I think he might have actually been shorter than that.
Right.
So that was, you know, so he's, you could quarrel. I could see you putting Chuck anywhere from 2 to 5 on that list. I'd probably, to me, Chuck's probably 4th on that list, honestly.
Yeah.
Maybe 3rd. I'd maybe put him above KG.
I'm trying to look at.
But where... I think I'd have Dirk as the second on that list, which is not going to be a popular opinion.
But again, when you think about the true form of a power forward, is Nowitzki there? I mean, because that's how they're going to discuss it. Is Nowitzki a power forward or a small forward?
No, he's a power forward. Come on.
But
he's never played small forward.
When
never.
You think of a power forward and the positions they play, they're a back-to-the-basket guy. The guys you name, Malone,
well,
Duncan, they're back-to-the-basket players.
Okay. I mean, was Barkley a back-to-the-basket player?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, kind of, but I think you get stuck on that more than a lot of people do. But, you know, as far as the productivity from playing the four, I mean, Dirk Nowitzki was incredible and incredibly consistent and you know, he's the reason that they won a title, and he's going to be remembered as the guy who took out the Miami. He's so far, he's the only one that's beaten Miami, the LeBron Miami team in the finals.
Yeah, I mean, that's true, and that's probably maybe how he'll go down as remembering. And yeah, it's an interesting discussion to put where would he be a power forward, and it's the same thing that's going to happen with.
So top, but anyway, yeah, getting back
a lot of other people, right? So getting back to
Marcus and Mayville. The top four that we're looking at, yeah, take 84 all day. Depth, I still think you go 96.
Yep, I think I have to agree. Yeah, that's a pretty easy argument to accept. Yeah, 84 probably best when it comes to top. And 2003, the other part of it, you got to revisit it again in 10 more years because things will really start to figure out as to how does Wade, Bosh, James, and Anthony, which are those top four, where are they going to be when their careers are finished?
Yeah.
You know, we already have an idea of where LeBron James is going to end up, probably as the greatest NBA player of all time.
I wouldn't say probably, but he's going to be one of the top two if his career continues on this arc.
Right now, top three, who would they be?
Top three of all time?
Yeah.
I wouldn't put LeBron there yet.
Okay.
My top three of all time, MJ's going to be up there. Man, there's just a mess of people that are just so ridiculously good. It's almost not even fair.
I'd put Kobe up there right now.
Really?
Yep.
Okay.
The fact that he won titles and he won them by himself, essentially, not with Shaq.
Well, he won two of them by himself.
Exactly.
I mean,
yes, there was help, but Shaq was the guy. I mean, he's the other Hall of Famer that was the question. Can you win him without Shaq? And he did it twice.
I would probably...
And Oscar Robertson to me would be my third.
Really? Okay.
Mr. Triple-Double. I mean.
Yeah, it's hard to leave off Kareem.
Yep, or Wilt.
Wilt I can leave off.
Okay.
Russell has got to be up there for me. I think Russell's got to have one of those spots. And Tim Duncan gets chronically underrated. I at least need to bring up his name in there because of how consistently good he has been. And when you look at his peak and some of the playoff numbers that he put up during that kind of 02 to 05 stretch, it's insane how good those numbers were. I'd probably go Michael, Magic, Russell.
Okay.
Probably my three.
Yeah. It's so much fun because they just, the things they did and the way they defined their positions, the way they played the game, it's discussions we could have for hours.
Yes.
If we could get like an NBA expert on the podcast and just talk to him about, you know, greatness by this guy and where they fit into the all-time great and just talk
Or just read Simmons' book. I mean, you may not agree, but you can get the arguments. If you need to borrow it, I've got it.
You know, there was an interesting thing in the, I think he had a Rolling Stone article that I read some tidbits out of it. Then my like, dislike, my love-hate relationship with Bill Simmons kind of goes back and forth just because there's things about him that I go, well, why would you do that? But then there's things about him go, yeah, that makes sense. That, you know.
He's willing to put some things out there that other people aren't, and he'll present the arguments, and I appreciate the way that he presents the arguments. I don't always agree with him, but you know the way he puts things out there, and if you have the mind of your own to say, okay, I agree with this, I don't agree with this.
There was something that you might have missed it, but he put out there. What was it? It was during the NBA lottery. I think it was game one of the Heat Pacers game, and James did not have a good first half.
Yep.
And his argument for why James came out flat was maybe he was thinking about the Cavaliers getting the number one pick this year in the draft.
I hope he was kidding.
And it came
across.
I hope
that was tongue-in-cheek.
That's kind of how I thought, but the way he tried to present it, it almost seemed like he was like, yeah, this might be a reason.
Okay.
Like, this might be for real.
Yeah.
And you're going, well, why would that matter?
I would have had to have seen that clip.
Nobody on
the
set laughed or thought about that in a humorous way. But again, you know, the way I thought about it, too, is I looked at this and go, if I was with my buddies in the stands, that would be something like, oh, yeah, he's probably just thinking about the Cavs. Yeah. Okay, it's a joke, but nobody got it.
Yeah, but, and you know, at least it's kind of nice having somebody who's willing to put those jokes out there. It's like, okay.
Yeah, you know? That's true. So, well, that's going to wrap up the podcast, the post-Europe edition of the Pinto and White Shadow Show, the 043 podcast. Again, if you want to comment, leave us a comment in the comment section at kfgo.com. Drop us a line at pinto.whiteshadow@gmail.com or you can tweet at us. I'm at PintoKFGO, Brad Jones.
At the Bison Guy.
You can find us on iTunes as well, the Pinto and White Shadow Show. So for Brad Jones, I'm Daniel Gunnarsson saying thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful rest of your day or whatever else you're doing. Maybe it's night. I don't know. Have a wonderful rest of your day.